Welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast for anyone who wants to raise other people's money for a business or property venture. Right now, there has never been more money on the planet, and there has never been more opportunity. This podcast will help you put the two together. So, if you need money for your business or property proposals from banks, lenders, angels, whales, or dragons, this is the podcast for you.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the How to Raise Money podcast with me, Ray McLennan.
I nearly forgot. And it's with me, Nigel T-Best. I was thinking, oh, this sounds quite interesting. Who's this with? Anyway, before I get distracted again, Ray, how the devil are you?
As always, Nigel, positive as always. Positive and looking forward. No point in looking back. Always looking forward. Always looking for an angle. Always looking for ways to help people raise money, to save money, and to not chuck money away. On that very subject, let me tell you this week's story, because I got a message out of the blue from someone saying, would you speak to this guy? This business guy has had an awful lot of problems with the banks, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think you might be the person to help him. So I said, fine, okay. Gave him my details, and we decided the best course of action was to have a phone call. So I spoke to the chap on the phone, said what happened, and he said that the bank had unlawfully taken his house away from him. They'd been evicted, all the rest of it. They didn't have a mortgage on the house at all. But he had a business, and the business had suffered, and the bank had claimed that he had pledged the property as security. Of course, he maintained he absolutely hadn't. And I said, right, okay, tell me a bit about what would you like to happen before we get into it. Asked him a few other questions. So when did this happen? It happened in 2014, so it's 10 years ago. And what he wanted was to get his house back. He said, I want the house back. I said, well, that's probably not going to happen because they've sold it. Yes, they have sold it. But the person that bought the house, quite a big house, it was £1.3 million property. It was a big house. He said, the person that bought it was my neighbor. And they have properties in Vietnam and France and places like that. And they've never spent more than 6 months in the last 10 years in that house. So, you know, they don't need it type thing. And I want it back. So I said, right, okay, well, why don't you go after the bank to get a remedy, financial remedy that allows you to buy it back? And he said, no, I want the house back. So I said, right, well, what have you done so far? Anyway, turns out that he's, after I asked him to send me some information, I received letter after, or copious amounts of letters that he'd sent. And essentially he had accused the bank, the judiciary, and the police of criminal conspiracy and fraud. Now, all very well. But as I said to him, I said, well, that's going to be extremely difficult for you because the burden of proof on fraud is very high. Why don't you, or at least had it been me, I would have gone after the bank for innocent misrepresentation. Now, whether it's innocent or whether it's negligent or whether it's any other kind of misrepresentation, the remedy is the same, which means that you can rescission of the contract and they put things back to the way they were before, which sometimes involves a financial remedy. And I've found over the years that that's a good way to go. No, he was adamant. He wanted his house back. And I said, well, I'm here to tell you that that will cost a lot of money and you're not going to get anywhere. He said, that's exactly what's happened. And that's why I'm calling you. Turns out he has spent £110,000 on legal fees in the last 10 years. And he's no further forward. And he's still chucking letters out at the Lord Chancellor and the judiciary and accusing them of this, that, next thing. And I said, well, they'll just close ranks. He said, that's exactly what's happened. I said, well, you've had a conversation with me for half an hour and I've given you that information for free. Why did you go and spend £110,000 on getting that information? Because he had the money. Now, other people have called me and they don't have the money. And when they don't have the money, sometimes that's a good thing. Because if you're seeking a remedy or you're seeking to get some kind of financial recovery, what you need is a non-judicial remedy. And they are out there. Commercially, they are out there. We've spoken about this before, and they can be done. So I know we're going to talk about a different subject today, but that's my kind of opening rant, that if you're listening to this and you're thinking, right, well, you know, the bank, the building society, the mortgage provider, whatever it was, seem to, or if you've got that feeling inside you of natural justice not being done, then get in touch. get in touch by emailing us hello@htrmoney.co.uk and tell us your story very briefly. And it might be that we can make a phone call, have a conversation, and that will save you money. It might be that you might need to raise money to do something about it, but there are many, many ways of doing that without, you know, putting the house at risk or without emptying your bank account. So get in touch if that is something that is affecting you. So I know, Nigel, that's a bit longer when you asked me how my week was, but I just thought I'd share that little snippet of useful information.
When will I ever learn? You know, I should really stop asking you. You know, they reckon statistically when somebody says, how are you? 80%, you know, are just really not taking in whatever you say. 10% have a bit of sympathy and the other 10% think you deserve everything you get. So there you go. Which category do I fall in?
Be careful to ask someone how they are because they might just tell you.
Exactly. Interesting stuff there, Ray, in terms of all that. Remedies and all the rest of it. I always think this, when you were talking to me about this one, this is a classic case, folks, of, you know, I think psychological experiments, psychology in this, it's always a case of why is society so divided? And people will, if you put them under pressure and say you've made a bad decision, a lot of people may well internally be going, I think I have. But the psychology of it is, I'm not going to admit that. I'm going to dig my heels in. I'm going to entrench myself in an even more vehement defense of something, the indefensible almost, which is why you see politicians and all sorts of people doing it time after time after time. Give them a get out. So great example yesterday that I saw on the news. Over here north of England, they've done these managed motorways. So highways, freeways, you know, and what they did was they took away the hard shoulder. So the safety lane where nobody drives in it, if you break down, you pull in there and you've got a reasonable chance of being able to sort things out or being safe.
Yeah.
They widened it and they said, no, we're going to make all the lanes live and, you know, we're going to have cameras. And if someone breaks down, it will alert it. Signs will come on and people will swerve, you know, around the distressed vehicle and all the rest of it. Well, I mean, time after time, it's shown that all that happens is some East European lorry driver just plows into the back of it because he was having a shave using his laptop whilst on his mobile phone. I jest, but, you know, in terms of the
stereotypical Clarkson there, when you mentioned lorry drivers, I was thinking of Jeremy Clarkson's comment.
Yes, I won't go down that route. But, you know, no, I just stereotypical. No, it's all sorts of things. People have lost their lives. It has been extremely dangerous that if you break down on these motorways. And so what they're doing is they had these little sort of safe places, which is a patch of tarmac just off to the side, about every mile, 2 miles or whatever. So obviously you're hoping that your car breaks down just as you pass something that's only about 30 yards long and you can get into safety. And what they found is there aren't enough. Nobody breaks down and can limp into these things. The car conks out where it conks out and you just get hit and it's killing people. And they had the chief exec or whatever, the highways, and he's there because they're being forced now to build extra ones because it's too dangerous. And the reporter was belligerently sort of saying, you know, you got this wrong, didn't you? You got it wrong. And he started digging himself into defending. No, we did what, you know, we said and we've done it and all the other roads, it's safer and it's this and that. And it was just a case of if the reporter had been a little bit more subtle and he'd gone to the guy and he said, look, you know, these roads are pretty, you know, incredible for the volume of traffic, the journeys, they are incredibly safe, aren't they? Yes. And it is so unfortunate and it's so scary, isn't it, for someone when they break down or the car goes wrong? Yes. And, you know, looking back on it, God, wouldn't it have been great if, you know, the designers had factored in how far a car can travel, where they break down and all the rest of it. And you know, and when we'd done this first time around, a few more had been put in. Wouldn't that have been great? Yes. It said, yeah, so isn't it great that you're now putting them in? Yes. And he probably would have said, yeah, and actually we're going to probably put a few more in that we weren't asked for because we could see the benefit. And suddenly that attitude is spun and the person sees that the person's being, you know, helpful in giving them a way of agreeing and then sort of saying, yes, and actually we'll do more. Whereas this guy sort of went, no, we were right. Everyone else is wrong. I don't care that people are dying and we're being forced to do this and we're not happy, sort of thing. And I think this is what you're saying with this thing. You put the backup of someone in terms of everyone here is corrupt. You should all go to jail, including you, 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 and you, sort of thing. It doesn't help, does it? But this this sort of innocent misrepresentation, this way it gives people an out where they don't lose face, they don't have to dig their heels in, they don't have to do all these things. And this is the subtle art, folks, of when you're looking at this, you know, just think to yourself, okay, as I mentioned to you, didn't I think Alexander the Great, after he died, there were several that took over. And one of the kings that took over, I think it was called Pyrrhos, and he fought a battle. And at the end of it, he said, oh my goodness, he won the battle. But he said, if I have to fight another couple of these, I'm done for. And it became known as the Pyrrhic victory, whereby, yes, you may well win, but you don't at the end of it come out with anything of any real benefit. You lose even though you win. So, folks,
well, it was actually
a literary lesson, is that one. Great example.
It came up so many times that I actually wrote a Substack on it. So at raymaclennan.substack.com, you can have a look there. It's called Don't Claim Fraud, Claim This Instead. And it talks about how important words are because, you know, they mean something. But in law, the judiciary expect words to have a very specific meaning. And fraud has a very specific meaning. And that's why you've got to be very careful about, you know, claiming that it's fraud, because that's wrongful or criminal deception intended to result in personal or financial gain. So there has to be a criminal mind, the criminal intent, and that's why the burden of proof is so much higher. So it's much, much better to claim misrepresentation. And the three types are fraudulent, negligent, and innocent. But the remedies are all the same. They're absolutely the same. But you've got to be very careful about the meaning of words. And it's a bit like, you know, in the UK, what does the meaning of words mean? Well, if you've ever heard your wife say, I'll just be a minute, she doesn't mean a minute. Give me 1 second, doesn't mean 1 second. Leave it with me, doesn't mean it's going to happen. If I have time, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. So words have different meanings and the interpretation of those words. But when it comes to criminal, or when it comes to making an accusation, a criminal accusation, you have to be very, very careful. You've got to have a lot of evidence. You've got to go to, you know, only the state can take someone to court on a criminal charge. So you've got to provide the state, the director of public prosecutions, you've got to provide them with enough evidence that they can convict beyond reasonable doubt. Now, you can very, very rarely, I'm going to say very rarely, 99.9% of the time, you can't prove that. So with odds like that stacked against you, why would you do it? Now, it also begs the question, we talk about raising money, saving money. Why would a barrister or lawyer not tell him that, like I did in the first half hour of the conversation? Because they, one of the things they'll do is they'll say, well, how badly do you want to do this? You know, isn't it a matter of principle? And yes, we can do this and I'm sure we can do that, but we don't know what the outcome will be. But hey, here's my bank details. Stick $5,000 in the bank and I'll start sending letters out on your behalf. And then you can tell all your friends, you've got a barrister on it. You know, a law firm has taken up my case and we've got a barrister on it. I'm sorry to say, I was a lawyer. I know how they work and how they think. And they will not give any free information right up front if they can help it. They will try and extract some money from you. First of all, the first hour might be free conversation, but I guarantee you in that hour they will want to try and find out how much money you've got, how much money they can take off you. That sounds terrible, it sounds cynical, that's the way the world works. So this is not about raising money, this podcast is all about saving money. So if you're staring down the barrel of a legal challenge, it's nearly always contractual. If you're in commerce, whatever you're doing, it's nearly always contractual. And there are many, many things that you can do before getting all legal and before threatening. And the words you use are very important. And I know if you're listening to this and you've ever had a lawyer's letter about something you've, you know, allegedly done, guaranteed the wording of that letter just puts your back up. And they always tell you to get advice and they always tell you to get a lawyer to fight this because it's not going to go away, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because it perpetuates the whole cycle. Their lawyer wants you to get a lawyer because so he can deal lawyer to lawyer. And between them, you know, they don't have any kind of contract in place, but there's this tacit understanding that, you know, it might take us a while to get to this point where we both realize there's nothing can be done, but that point's 6 months away and several letters away. That's what happens. So don't fall into that trap. Don't get caught up. Don't let your ego and emotion, don't have a Pyrrhic victory just simply because, you know, you want to try and score points over someone. And if you don't believe that this happens, and I'm sure you do if you're listening to this, but all you need to do is go online and search for boundary disputes. And you will see Mr. and Mrs. Smith have a boundary wall with Mr. and Mrs. Jones. They've fought over it for 20 years and it's cost each of them 300 grand in legal fees. And it's probably over 6 inches of a boundary fence or something ridiculous. But it became a matter of principle. They didn't like each other and it just went on and on and on. And all it needed was a sit down, a glass of beer, probably a bit of a chat, and someone to step in and go, hang on a second, this is going to cost you an absolute fortune. You know, do the right thing and let's find an alternative non-judicial way of sorting it. And they do exist. You're listening to this and thinking, well, actually, I'm a bit far down the line with this. Get in touch. Hello at HDR Money. Stick legal challenge in the subject line and we'll see if we can help you where we can.
Ray, I mean, it's so true. I mean, I'm thankful I've never been through it, but you look at divorces and everything is going to be amicable until they get lawyers involved. And then all of a sudden it becomes an absolute nightmare. And then what you find is at the end of it, it was kind of split how they were going to split it anyway, but they only got about 50% left because the rest they paid two lots of, you know, legal fees. I mean, it is madness. So yeah, I think it's one of these things, folks. When you're looking at this sort of thing, just think to yourself, okay, look, how can we both walk away from this without it taking up our headspace, without it taking up our time, our lives? And, you know, where people feel, okay, you know, live and learn. It's cost me a bit or whatever, or I've been compensated a bit. Let's just move on. Because time is short, folks. The deal of the century comes along every day. You've got to be in a position to do it. And if your head has been taken up with all these other sort of things and arguments and what have you, you're missing out on other opportunities. So, yeah, you know, I've had things and it's grating and it's you're in the right, they are most definitely in the wrong, but you look at it. I asked a question about something for me, Ray, the other day, and the advice was, well, this would have to go to trial. Mm. And it was like, okay, I said, that sounds like I just give you a blank check sort of thing, or said, well, you'd have to be, I can tell you now, it's very doubtful that you would be successful and you would have to pay their fees as well. And it was just like, no chance. And here's the rub, folks. If you are looking at legal action, there are two distinct views of you, depending on whether you are an individual or you are acting on the behalf of an incorporated body. If you are the director of a company, the judge will immediately say that you are, or have the opinion, you are an expert. You should know these things, and therefore we are treating you as equal parties, and it's a dispute, and yeah, it's a flip of the coin as to whether you win. If you go into it and it's a big company and you're an individual, then you get almost, Ray, is it true to say, kind of the layman's sort of thing? You're not the expert, they are. And when it comes down to contracts and contract law, if there isn't the balance at the beginning in terms of knowledge or expertise, then it can look more favorably on you that you were potentially missold, misled, misrepresented, and have you. But if you are director of a limited company, that just disappears, and you should know better is basically what they're saying. So be careful, folks. Are you doing it you know, from your own point of view or as a director of a limited company, because the you know, you may well be as baffled in both situations equally, but the courts will not see that. And the judge will just say, no, you're a limited company, you're a director, therefore you're an expert, you should have known better, sod off. And by the way, pay his costs, which at that point, the KC is just racking them up, doubling it, getting his calculator out and saying, what happens if I put this to the power of 12? How much is the bill then? Ka-ching. Mm-hmm. And then they very graciously settle for only 85% of what they submit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you remember recently the Battle of the Wags. Was it Wayne Rooney's wife versus Jamie Vardy's wife? Do you remember
that? Oh, yeah. Wagatha Christie or something.
A year or so ago, Wagatha Christie, that's right. I mean, that went to law and cost each of them a couple of million quid. And in fact, the loser of that particular one, which was Rebecca Vardy, had to pay the costs for the other side. You know, over Instagram posts and things like that. Just utterly stupid. And then, of course, Wayne Rooney's wife, Colleen Rooney, went on to make a documentary and some other things and made even more money out of it. So, you know, ridiculous. But I remember first week of being a lawyer, the managing partner calling you in for that sort of personal one-to-one chat, much older, wiser guy. And he said to me, there's a couple of things that you're guaranteed to make a lot of money. And that's when there's five words. And that's when someone says to you, it's a matter of principle. You know that you're going to make a fortune because they're going to dig their heels in. And that's what that guy has done in the early example I gave you. He spent over £100,000 on a matter of principle. And then he said, here's how we think the legal system works. And it's three things. So number one is someone wrongs you. Number two is you hire a lawyer. Number three, you get justice. But here's how it actually works. Number one, someone wrongs you. Number two, him or her with the deepest pockets wins. End of story. That's it. You know, legal battles are expensive and very time consuming. And as you say, you don't need the headspace to be clogged up with them. And if you're wronged by someone who's more richer or powerful than you, good luck with seeking justice, because it doesn't exist. You have to be more, you have to be more creative in your seeking a remedy. Anyway, is that the episode? Is that
well, that was not what we were going to talk about at all. However, it's amazing how we get caught up in
the episode. But just, I mean, all we need to do is sort of talk about examples from real life of what's happened this week.
Yeah, well, I know. Something on it.
Anyway, that's probably enough for now. On that bombshell, I've been Ray McLennan.
I'm still Nigel Tebas. And hopefully, folks, thank you for listening, and we will hopefully have you listening to us again very soon.
Thank you for listening to the How to Raise Money podcast. It's made for people who want to raise money as debt or investment equity for their business or property proposal or empire. The website has all the useful links and underlying research, and you can get downloads of the checklists and other useful information. See you next time, where we can show you how to raise money. There is abundance. There is money enough for everyone on the planet. The question is, who has yours?